Jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is no joke. It takes years to master.
Martial arts are a vehicle for developing your human potential. And nothing in my life has ever put me in face with reality better than jiu-jitsu.
Training in BJJ offers a powerful lens through which to examine some primary human concerns: truth versus delusion, self-knowledge, ethics, and overcoming fear.
There's more philosophy in our mats than actually philosophy in any Ivy League school.
Welcome to Philosophy.
What up, everybody?
And welcome to another episode of
Philosophy.
My name is Ollie.
My name is Iki.
And how's it going, bro?
I'm chilling like a villain. How are you doing,
I'm
bro?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Well, last week we had one victor, and this week we've got another victor.
Yeah, and I can't wait to introduce you guys to it. Before anything, I was talking with Coach the other day, and we were talking about like fighters that are making like a big name for themselves at the moment. And I was like, man, you know who I like a lot? Vitor Hugo. Yeah, so, ladies and gentlemen, Vitor Hugo is on a podcast with us today. Hey, Peter.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Thanks for the invitation. Very excited to be here today. It's been a while since I haven't done a podcast.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, man. We really appreciate it. We're going to kick things off by asking the question we ask everyone when they join the podcast. How did you get into jiu-jitsu?
Through my father. Yeah. I was during my school break, and I had a lot of time to do stuff, but I wasn't doing much, just playing video games and stuff. So I was gaining weight. I was pretty frustrated with sports because I always tried to be like into sports, but I was bad at it. So nobody ever gave me like a chance. So like, oh, you might have a future, come join us. So I just keep trying, but that I didn't got a lot of results. I was 14. I was thinking about, man, what am I gonna do with my life? I really want to be like an athlete at something, but I suck at everything. So I was just like playing video games and stuff. And this friend, my dad had a friend, and he was doing jiu-jitsu for a while, and he invited my dad, and my dad, oh, let's do it. So my dad went, I think, like 1 week before me or two, and then he just dragged me to the school.
Yeah, nice one, man.
That's how it happened.
I think it's fair to say you don't suck anymore.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you...
Not as bad as I used to do.
Well, that's the goal, right? Get better every day if you can. Yeah. Did you expect it to kind of turn out the way it's turned out?
No way, man. No way, because everything happened so fast, you know? I think once I had 5 years into jiu-jitsu, I was... Yeah, 5, 6 years into jiu-jitsu, I was moving to America. So everything happened so fast. I wasn't very talented, but I put a lot of work in. Whenever I was white belt, I would spend like my whole day at the gym, just like doing 4 sessions a day. And I seen a lot of people like to do that in the beginning, but they disappear because they're like full of. But I think that was one of the main keys. I never gave up. I kept showing up. And things start to happen, you know, like whenever I was a juvenile blue belt, I did my first trip out of the city, so out of state. And from there, I just kept like traveling further and further. And now here I am.
Why do you think so many people drop out of jiu-jitsu?
I have seen many cases, you know. I have seen a lot of excited people that they see, they like it. They like the almost like they call here like the wrestle part, like physical, and you don't get hit. So you can do it like for a long time. It's not so much impact, like strike-wise. So I see like they think it's fun, but it's hard for you to see like a quick improvement depending what's your background, you know. Even if you have a good background, if you have a martial artist, like you still can get like fucked up by a little kid. So people tend to get frustrated, you know. And I think the approach that the school does has a big part in it too, you know. So there's a main factors that can have a lot to do with the person's personality, you know. Some people, they like to start something and they get like very into it in the beginning, and they just like lost the taste after a while. I don't want to go anymore. Some schools, they might not have the right approach for beginners. They don't pay as much attention for the beginners. Like, not that they don't want the beginners there, but they just want the tough ones sometimes. So that might push some people away that could have maybe a future later on. They maybe haven't found the path yet. So I think there's many things that can happen there, you know.
It's funny you talk about like the juvenile blue belt. Like, I swear that's people's worst nightmares. Like, we've got a guy who's just got his black belt, and he's looking at his bracket, and sure enough, there's people that were like, you know, started when they were 8. He's like off in the masters with the black belt. That's the thing you feel the most, right?
It's fun. Because also, what's funny is like, I have guys that I know since juvenile blue belt, and we are here now. Like, we all made it to the pros in this sport. Like, guys like Gabriel Souza, Jonas Andrade, I think you guys know, he lives in Spain. We all from the same city. We all used to fight the same absolutes as 15 years old, 16 years old. And it's cool to see all those guys out there killing it, you know. It's a good feeling.
How is it like when you did the transition from Brazil to the US? I'm guessing you had to change schools. It was like a new language. And also, I wonder like, what were the things that for you were almost like hard that made you feel like, oh, did you ever have a moment like, ah, maybe I should quit now, or not at all?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's pretty hard, man, because I think you guys know, like, the currency from Brazil to the US is like pretty like crazy. I think right now it's 1 for 5. When I moved, I think I was 1 for 4. So if my parents ever send money to me from Brazil, for them it would be like a big money, like not big, like, but for me it would be like $200. So I had to make out a living from month to month with like probably $300 per month. So it was kind of rushed. I had help from a lot of people. A lot of people helped me, but they also doing the hustle. So there is not much opportunity for them like to give a lot of money for you, you know? And also I didn't want to lose my focus. So maybe if I tried to work with something else, I don't think I would have the same like performance that I had. So I just decided to go through the hustles, like maybe I'll surf a little bit. Like, I crashed at my friend's couch for like a long time, and also making a little money, but just trying to compete as much as I could. I had a good sponsorship, like they would pay my tournaments to go. And I had a lot of friends who helped me with like trips. So, but like out of that, like the day by day, I would have to be like spend a little money as possible, very little money. So besides that, it's different, you know. Like in Brazil, I used to live with my mom. So, you know, your mom is always doing everything for you. So I moved out of Brazil, boom, straight to live by myself and like live in my French couch. So I was like, damn, that was a big change. Like, you can't do the same shit to the home, like leave clothes around, don't do the dishes. So that was a big time, like, that I think a lot of people had trouble with. And I had like, you have to mature yourself far away from home. So that was a big change for me. The English was a big barrier. I never went to school, so I learned with like in the jiu-jitsu with friends. So in the beginning, that was like, oh man, am I ever gonna learn that? So there's a lot of things that go through your head, like, oh damn, I don't have money, I'm here, maybe I should go back to Brazil, because you miss your family too. I don't have family here. So there's a lot of things that go on. But I think every tournament that you go, and if you see yourself improving it, you see your name popping up like on the internet or something like that, makes you motivated. Or maybe I can make it. And I just kept like tuning vision, and I think things happen like the way they should. I start to flow, and I'm here. Yeah.
And now you're rocking and rolling with the best of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Made it.
Who stands out that you faced, that you fought, where you thought, man, that was a rough and tumble?
I think like one of my biggest matches I had like last year, 2019. I think my victory over Cyborg Nogi was a big time victory, because that put my name more out there. Because some people, they follow jiu-jitsu like through the roots, so they know you since like purple belt. So whenever you have a big win, they're just like, oh, I knew that would happen. But some people, they don't even know you. So whenever you beat a guy like that, they're like, oh shit, who's that? That happens a lot. And you either won or not, like, you're gonna make a lot of money out of the casual people. Because the people that buy, they're just following like the big stars. So that was a big victory. And my victory against Maragalli on Gi, I think it was a big one too. Like, put my name way more out there too, because I was the underdog for the fight for sure, but came out with the victory. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Was it Cyborg? You got with a heel hook, inside heel hook, maybe?
No, it was a knee bar.
Knee bar. Yeah. Knee bar. Yeah. Is it? You know, we're like under fight sports, seconds. Yeah.
You guys are?
Under fight sports.
Yeah.
Because I think
you guys can delete the spark.
No, but I think
he's in trouble.
He beat you in the weight, but then you fought in the absolute and you beat him in the absolute. Is that the right way?
Yeah. We are, I think it's 2-1. He won me twice.
Yeah.
As he beat me back in August at Vegas, and he beat me the weight. And then I had to face him again the finals of the absolute. So I went just straight shooter, you know. I have to go, man. I have to try my best, and I end up like submitting him.
That's crazy, because that was on the same day, right?
Yeah, same day, later. Yeah. I left the competition, went back to my hotel, deep in the jacuzzi, and just started to like concentrate to my finals, you know, because I think a lot of people, they spend a lot of time in the tournament whenever they have to fight again, and I don't think that's a good thing for you, because there's a lot of energy there. Like, people are like scared, they'll have a lot of adrenaline, and that kind of almost like sucks their good energy out of you. You need a lot of energy whenever you go for a absolute. So a good way that I found to do is like exclude myself. I just move far away, I go to the hotel, I go to the furthest room that they have, and just like stay on the zone, you know. For sure you want to be there, help your friends and stuff, but you gotta think, man, this is my day. I do what I gotta do to bring out my best. So that's what one of the like biggest things that I took out that day. I just excluded myself, like was in the zone, and the result came in, you know, I won.
Is there anyone you'd want to fight or anyone that like, because I guess for you when you're coming up, there's people that you might look at and think, you know, you either want to emulate their game or you look up to them, you like them as a fighter, but is there anyone that you would love to step on the mats with?
Man, I gotta say there's a lot of names, because to be honest with you, like after I just mentioned it to you, my biggest victories for me, and once I won Merigali, I was pumped up. I felt like I was in my best fish of my life. I had no injuries. I was like, my cardio was pretty good, technique too, and boom, COVID happened. So I was really looking forward for that year, because I felt like that year I was gonna do like big fights. I was looking forward for like World's Absolute. Pans was coming like I think 3 weeks after my fight with Merigali, so I was like, people already was like looking up like to me in the bracket, how the bracket would like work out, and I think that was very frustrating, you know. So there's a lot of names, because once it started to get fun to me, like tournament wise, boom, COVID happened. So there's a lot of fights that I haven't done yet. So my division two, I fought Buchecha once. I never fought John Gabriel, all those big names, absolute true. So also I do Gi and Nogi, so there's a lot of names I haven't fought yet. Philippe Penn, I never fought them. I want to face those guys, you know, because I grew up seeing those guys fight. Like, I was a white belt, Buchecha was winning world titles already, and I got to fight in ADCC, so it was a pretty cool experience, you know? Just test myself against the best. That's what I want to do. What's so many names that...
Yeah, already too many. What's it like stepping out in ADCC?
Oh, that was a good experience, man. Because I wasn't supposed to go. I was invited covering up, I think it was Khaled Sapato. He was on UFC, and I invite out of the Plus 99 came out. And I gladly it came out like soon enough, and then I could make it, you know. I was happy about it. It was fun. Like the whole structure, you see those guys there that I used to see in the highlights. And now you're being part of it, you know, it was pretty amazing, pretty amazing. I wasn't in my best shape. I had a couple injuries, but I just wanted to be there, you know, just be part of it. And I ended up not being so bad. I bet Jared off in first round, had a good match with Buchecha, and I think it was a good experience. For sure, I want to do many others, you know. Sean has like 50 fights. Maybe I can have at least like 40.
I think I was listening to a podcast with Cody Still and William Tackett, and I think Cody Still was a stand-in, so I think he basically was invited to come in case something happens to one of the fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's got to be a weird mental thing, but at the same time he was like, he prepared as if he was going to fight. Because you would have to. You don't want to get caught.
You gotta be ready. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so many people get injured during the preparation, because it's such a hard tournament, and people like kill themselves like training. You know, like it's a lot of wrestling and like pushing. So you already know people is gonna like pull out. So you gotta be ready. I was getting ready, but as I said, I had a couple of injuries, but I just kept pushing through it. So That's how it happened.
The smart way to deal with an injury.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like they say you should take some time off, but whenever you're in the peak of your career, you don't want to take time off because you feel like you're missing out on the opportunity. So if you have the right persons, they will have you like doing the right amount of work for you to keep being able like to compete.
Yeah. If ADCC comes knocking, like you've got to try and
do everything you can, right? As long as you can walk, you
yeah, you should be on the mats.
Yeah.
I think like any sport, I don't think there is any sport where like the athlete is like 100% all year round.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible. It's pretty hard. But the thing is like jiu-jitsu is still growing, so we don't have the amount of support that we should. Like, you don't have a PT with you 24/7. Some countries, like back in Brazil, I have 3 PTs. Like, they don't charge me. But here in the US, it's kind of harder. So maybe I spend a lot of money, PT and recovery, have to get money out of my pocket for it. So it makes things harder. Maybe some people don't have the money to do it, so they just keep pushing through it. So that makes, I think that might make things a little harder, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think there's a lot of like, how you're gonna like, how do I say, be good for the community, you know, around you, and then they're gonna treat you well. It's not about like win the medals and I don't give a shit about anybody. You gotta be good to the other people because they might help you soon, you know. Like a white belt can be like a PT and they can help you later, you know. So it's a lot has a lot to do how you're gonna behave yourself on the mats, on and off the mats, with the people around you. That's gonna be a big time help.
How different is your training schedule day to day versus like, I know I have a tough competition season coming up? Does it change a lot or?
It depends if I'm hurt or not. Yeah. If I'm feeling good, I just train how am I supposed to train. Whenever I get close to the competition, I'm really chill, man. Like I see some of my friends, they like kill themselves to the competition. And I feel like there's a little bit of frustration. Whenever it's going to the competition, I just want to like spend my gear, like put my gear on, or maybe like if it's doing no gear, I just want to pop up at the gym, just have fun. Joke around, move a little bit, cause the hard work has been done, you know? Like you're not going to be any better in 1 week or 2 weeks prior to the competition. You just have to keep the level and stay happy. Because I think what happens sometimes over training is like people is like are like frustrated. Maybe they're not like so confident, and I'm gonna keep push harder. And then like whenever the day for you to like perform shows up, you're like, am I ready or am I not? You know, I think you gotta feel like ready before the competition. I'm like, bro, I'm ready. You just pop in the gym to be happy. You gotta be in the zone there, like happy what you do and motivated, you know? And for me, I feel like as less of a roll before the competition, better, because what happens when you don't roll for a week? You want to roll. So it gives you like, oh man, I want to roll so bad. I want to pass someone's guard. I want to submit somebody. Because it's almost like a little drug. When I have the drug, you want it so bad. So that's how I like to do it, you know.
I've been off the mats for about 2 weeks now with a rib injury. And you've literally just summed up my whole experience. Like I just want to back on that mat.
you want that so bad.
Yeah, definitely. How do you see the sport progressing? Because I feel like you're saying, you're just making that kind of big name for yourself. You're beating these people. You're stepping out into the public eye. I'm sure it's going to open up and, you know, you'll be doing all the big stuff when it happens. But like, how do you see the sport from where you're standing progressing?
Yeah, it's progressing a lot, man. Also, I think like down for these years now, it's becoming way like more and more competitive. You don't see a name popping out that much. There's a lot of names in the division can win, and I think that's good for the sport because there is more like big figures. So as more big figures you have in the division, maybe more fans you have, because that people might have their fans, the other fans, and that brings out more people. And I just hang out with the OGs like Shanji, Lovato, and they know how it used to be back then. So they always telling me how fortunate I am to be living this year, this era, you know, like we're getting good payouts and stuff. And my main goal is just to make it like even bigger, you know, like put my personality to it and just try to make it to bigger. I like to work with beginners too. Like, I think as more people we put into jiu-jitsu, better, because it's going to make the sports bigger. And more people doing it, that means more fans, more people watching, more people consuming, it's more customers, you know? So I think a lot of people have been doing good stuff to the sport, from competition to like the schools when they have like the how they approach the students. And I think that's like promising, man, because we do the baddest like sport in the world. They proved it back then in the UFC. They put the guys in a cage, and who came out? The guy who wearing a gi. So that has been proven. I think now it just has to do like with strategy, marketing ourselves better, and they'll have a big impact later on. You know.
It's funny you were talking about back in the day. I can't remember who it was. It was either Arios Teta or it was Alan Finfoe did a like little Instagram thing with our coach during lockdown, and they were asking like, oh, what was it like back in the day? And he was saying they used to go to some tournaments where it was like mats and then a barbecue next to like the mats, and like the smoke and the hot coals would fall on it. There'd be like fights, like knocking things over with beers and stuff like that. Compared to now, you've got quite a slick operation going in some of these big ones.
Yeah. Because now tournaments are family environment. You go to a tournament, there is the mom, there is like the three kids. So we got to make it more entertainment as possible. Like make it look good, make people feel comfortable. And I think that's the future of the sport, you know, because also it's a long competition. So we got to make it comfortable for the people that's there, good food. Got to make it fun, because as long as they're there, they're like consuming more. And that's more money, you know, like for this part. So it's crazy. I'm not that old school, but I remember back in Brazil, I had one time that I was fighting a tournament. The lights of the gym ran out, like, I don't know, the blackout. And those guys, they pull out like the cars and the motorcycles and they turn the lights on and they had the finals under the car lights.
Amazing. Oh, that's kind of sick. Yeah.
That's,
you know, crazy. Like, you're not old school in terms of like started jiu-jitsu in the 90s, but your jiu-jitsu is quite interesting because I feel like you're like, it seems like you've embraced all parts of it. Like you've embraced the super classic pass guard, get to side control, and then like you also have like a very fluid movement, which is crazy because like you're huge. And it's just like, that's like not what you would expect. It's like, what do you think helped your jiu-jitsu develop that way? Sort of being more technical, even though you're big.
Yeah, I think like the mindset that I had since the beginning, you know, like I remember I was probably like a blue belt, juvenile blue belt, like end of my white belt. I used to watch these IBJJF tournaments, not even the just black belt divisions, probably like purple and brown. And I would see those ultra heavies just like pushing each other the whole match. And I was like, because my dad's a big guy. And I was like, man, I'm going to be big as my dad, but I don't want to fight like as this guy, just pushing each other around. And I like the movement, you know? I like that sensation that I have when I was flowing and like ahead of somebody in the transition. So I just felt like, man, I think my motto from now on is going to be my flow. Like how I'm going to move. I'm going to try to move different from all those guys. And if you see, that's one of the things that Buchecha stand out on whenever he was winning. He moved as nobody else with his size. So I think that's like something that like was really cool to see. And I want more of that, but even more. Like playing guard, playing invert guard, doing billion balls and all that shit. Because I could do it back then as a blue belt. So I was like, why am I going to stop to do this? I'm just going to keep doing this thing and see how I'm going to end up. So I think it just worked out well because I've been doing that for a long time, so I can move well, and I think it's exciting too. You know, I don't like to do like fights pushing each other. I just like to put myself out there. If you push each other for too long, why I'm not gonna pull guard and try to sweep you, let you go for your legs or something like that. So just make it fun, you know. I'm a big like jiu-jitsu spectator, so I watch a lot of jiu-jitsu. I used to watch way more back then, and you want to see fun matches, so that's what I always try to bring. I try to bring the fight that I wanted to watch if I was in the bystanders. So that's the main thing.
I think one of the things that we often talk about with our guests, which is the rule set and the format. And I think there's a strong case we made for the fact that IBJJF has a good rule set in terms of competition, but not necessarily a great rule set if you want to watch jiu-jitsu and you're not like an avid supporter of jiu-jitsu. Do you think that, what do you think the format is that works best for a spectator? Do you think it's submission only? Do you think it's ADCC, even EBI rules?
Yeah, I think like we still haven't fought the best one. I really like shorter matches, for watch, because I think 10 minutes match is like, if you don't do jiu-jitsu, you're not going to be able to like watch that. And I really like this event that I fight. It's called Third Coast. I think they get the real set from another event that they used to have back then. It's just like, if you do 11 points, it's over. So even like if you have a sweep battle, that makes you like, your sense of urgency. So you're not going to give up the points, because if my opponent gets you 11 points first, I'm going to lose. So it makes you push harder. And also what they do is like, go close to the overtime. Whenever you go to the overtime, before I have the overtime, they see who is the winner of the first round. So the winner gets to choose which position is going to start. So maybe if I'm facing a good wrestler and I was more active than him during the fight, I got to put him on his back for the next round. So that might be interesting, because I can do something that I wasn't able to do back in the first round, and that can create more like scrambles and stuff. But I think a lot of the rule set has to do also with the athlete. It's up to him, like what he wants to do, you know. I think I have done body match, but I was never, because I didn't want to. Most of the time the guy didn't want to engage, so I was just like sitting around. And also I didn't feel like standing up, because if he took me down, he would never engage again. So it kind of makes you, you know, like, I think that type of thing has a lot to do with the athletes. For events that have like more like the entertainment size, they gotta look up at the matchups and see what's gonna do good, you know? Another thing that I think is like important for the growth of the sport is like, if you put two really good guys for an event that people that are gonna watch, that you're looking for people that is not like from the sport, you don't need to put really good guys. You can put a good guy and maybe another guy that's not so good. So then you're gonna see the art at this prime. So like, you're really gonna see that guy beating the shit out of the other. So then you can see, oh, that's interesting. And then more that they get into it, then, oh, who is this guy? Oh, he's so good. How come he haven't fought this guy yet? And then that makes more like they understand, and then boom, that happens, you know? I just think that's something that can work out. I saw that me and Lovato, we were talking about this event, I think it was like back in the 2000s. I think Hickson Grace made it, and it was like four countries. It was like Brazil, US, Japan, and other countries, I can't remember. And the other guys from the other country were not big names, but still a good fights. Yeah, something it's fun to watch, because they are just going after it, you know? And I think that's the key too, you know? But as I said, I think it has a lot to do with the athletes too. Like, as you said, the IBJJF mindset is I want to win. So if I am winning, what I'm going to risk myself. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people that compete lots of IBJJF, they're going to keep their mindset to them, you know? So whenever they're on a show, they pay you to actually like perform and give it a show, they go there and they just try to win, you know? But I think throughout, like, time for time, like, they're not getting invited anymore. So who really gives a show is the one that's going to come back, because the private organizations, they're private. So then you just because you won 10 world titles, that doesn't mean that they're going to invite you out. You got to really like show your work. And I think that's how like things are going to get better, you know, like, and people has been putting, I haven't seen a lot of guys changing their mindset, you know, like, they used to be like winner points, and now like they're trying to submit like every match. And that's something that's been touching some people, you know, because a lot of people have this potential, you know. Myself, I always like to submit. And also whenever I change to my actual like team now, which is Ribeiro, like back like 6 years ago, they always pushed me, you know, you got to submit people. But the thing that they do different is like they want you to dominate before you submit. So, you know, like that's the thing that I start to work on, like probably end of my purple belt, because I was a little stubborn. And now like beginning of the brown belt, it's like I want to mount everybody and submit them from there. So as more as you put this mindset on, you're going to feel like unstoppable, and it's going to give you like the joy of like, oh, submission. I think that's important.
I had an idea for a rule set.
What's the idea for the rule set?
Do you want to hear my rule set?
Yeah, what's your rule set?
Why?
Last points win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think someone does it.
Yeah.
So this inventory they're talking about, they were so crazy because they had the points and every transition worth 1 point.
Wow.
And submission attempt would value as 3 points.
Ooh.
But the craziest thing you guys haven't heard yet. The craziest thing you haven't heard yet, there was no scoreboard. So I wasn't gonna be able to see if I was winning or not.
So you have to go.
This guy kept going. And it was like 3 minutes, 2 rounds of 3 minutes. So pretty short.
3 minutes.
Two rounds of three minutes.
Yeah.
So you have to go.
And
you have to
know
keep
if you're
going.
Winning. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't know if you're winning, you're just gonna like push.
That's quite good.
Yeah, that's good.
And if you could hide the time as well. Because then you
There was no time. There was no time showing too.
That's quite good.
It's that's just so good.
Yeah. It makes it more like a street fight.
Yeah.
Like fight for their life.
Yeah, it's true. Like you don't know until someone says, hey, it's over. You won. It's
I got told something once that there used to be a rule set where a submission gave you points and then the fight restarted. I was like, no, surely not. Some guy just getting submitted again and again.
Man, I have a weird question because I've been thinking about this. This is completely random, right? But it's like, you know, like, for example, I think we all grew up playing video games, right? The thing is, there is like, I saw this app on the phone, right? Where like, you can create a friend. You create a friend and the app learns about you. So like every day you talk to the app, the app learns more about you. If there was like a jiu-jitsu robot or like something like a hologram that you trained with, like let's say for example, do you think there is gonna be a day where people train with robots or like sort of like
John Danaher.
No, but like, let's say competing with a robot, like the same way in chess, I think like they already have.
Yeah. I wanted to roll myself. I want a robot, like just myself.
Oh, I
always had this feeling to like, man, I wanted to train myself. I wonder how old that be.
Yeah.
What's that saying? The greatest victory is to defeat yourself.
Yeah,
could literally beat yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That would be crazy, you know? Like, and you can choose with yourself you want to fight. Oh, I want to fight the judo myself.
I want to fight white belt myself.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's true. And it's like, you know, like how you walk in, like, hey, Alexa, you just go like, hey, Alexa, bring me white belt.
Man, we had Cameron Shane come on the podcast, and I was talking to him about the best movement person he knows, like the best person who's just moving. And he was saying that Shanjay Ribeiro is by far the best to move with.
Yeah.
What's that
it's
like?
It's crazy. He's like, pretty much, man. And also, he moves good. And also, there's a lot of, he finds himself moving good out of bad positions pretty good. So whenever you get like on his side, maybe side control, you hit his side, he almost feels like soap. You're trying to hold soap. The way he moves, you know, is so crazy. And that's something that he helped me a lot. Like I had this movement thing already that I liked, and he helped me to move myself even better. I feel like I'm moving better, but he's like, he tell me 10 things I'm doing wrong. So it's like levels to it. So it's something really cool. He has helped me a lot. And it's something he's very into it. Like he works with Cameron a lot. He does a lot of yoga and stuff. And the way he moves his shoulders and his hips, like synchronize it, it's crazy, you know? And I think it's even crazy how he can break it down to you. Like if I'm able to do it, a smaller person should be able to do it. Because I'm pretty big myself, you know? Like,
well, he's a big guy, right? He's not small or petite.
Yeah.
Like he's
big
guy.
He's big. He's like 220, and he can move like really good, man. Like the fluent, of the movement is crazy, you know. And it's just like hard to break him. Like you get to a good position, and he can work his escapes really good. And that, I don't think that's something that he's put out there so much because, of course, you don't want anybody to start on your back or something like that. It's just something that you are able to see more and more during training. Like, I have got to his back many times, and he's like, whoop, escape. And whenever he escapes, man, that's the hardest part because I put a lot of work to be there.
Yeah.
And he's making it effortless, his escape. So whenever he escapes, he's coming at you like crazy. You don't like, he's coming in a good position, and you're like, ready to fuck you up. So it's crazy. It's something really cool that makes my confidence through competition be way higher too, because he makes us work like specific positions that some people hate to be. And time from time, you start to be comfortable on this because you have the whole system. And now, like, oh, what if the guy does this? Oh, it's good. Just do it this way, that way, boom, boom, you know? Yeah. So it's good. It's a good foundation. I like his foundation. Love it, you know? Defense foundation, it's crazy.
It's so crazy because, like, you're speaking and we watch it, but, like, I think from watching, we can't even see
those small
details.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, even myself, I understand jiu-jitsu, and he's talking it. I can see it, and when I try to do, I think I'm doing it right, but he comes here, no, it's not this, it's that. And then that makes a huge difference in the whole movement.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a science, and I'm just being learned that more and more, you know? It's crazy.
You know
what? And that's what makes him so timeless, like Iceland. He's been competing for, I don't know how long. I think I was even born and he was competing. I think he's the guy who fought all generations. Yeah, You've seen him fought Jacare, he fought Eric Santos. He fought Marcelo Garcia, he fought Gordon Ryan. So I don't think nobody in this sport fought everybody as he did. He's just there for like forever.
Yeah, he came with the furniture. There's a guy in our gym. I'm not going to say his name. Big guy, really big guy. And he got drawn against Shanji. And he said that's the only time, bearing in mind he is a big guy, that's the only time he considered tapping to pressure, because he said when he got onto him, even just in side control, he could not believe the pressure he was generating, and it just kept coming and coming and coming and coming, and then he didn't.
Yeah,
it was like I think they had a good one, but he just was unbelievable.
Yeah, and he's not like a muscular guy. This pressure that he does has a lot to do with the body movement too. Mm. How you're gonna position it for body? It's crazy. Because people sometimes like get confused between pressure and squeeze someone. Mm. The squeeze is pretty much the final part. It's just like the little sauce. Your body positioning has to do way more with it. Because I'm not going to be able to squeeze you for 10 minutes. Mm. I have to find how to position my body. And, you know, like the way I'm going to be on top of you, then I'm not going to use as much energy. I'm just putting my weight. And that's actually the thing that I worked that I've been working lately like crazy. That's the biggest thing that I've been focused on lately, my pressure. Because you guys know I can move good, but Shanji would just joke with me, get on my half guard, now hold me here. And I couldn't. And he was like, oh man, you're a big guy, you can't hold me.
Like every coach across the country.
Where's your strength? Yeah, where's your strength? I'll be like frustrated. And we've been working on it for a long time, that pressure, you know? That pressure is not like just squeeze. It's like how you're gonna position it yourself. Because as less as your muscle, more energy you're gonna have, like spend throughout the fight. You know,
our coach has got just a horribly sick pressure game. Like his whole thing. Yeah. I asked him once. I was like, Coach, what would you do in this position? He goes, you know what? I don't know, but I'd find the thing that made you suffer the most. That's like his whole mentality. And when he mounts or when he gets you. He was saying, it's not a squeezing motion, it's a dropping and a sinking motion. That's the thing that holds you.
Yeah, exactly. And that takes time for you to find, you know, such like a lot of details. Mm. It's another science.
When do you think
that... The thing about jiu-jitsu, so many things to work on.
This is what I was going to ask. I was going to say, when did you kind of discover that? Like, at what point? Because, I mean, obviously you are a very advanced guy in the jiu-jitsu game, so you're still discovering new things and working on new things.
Yeah, that's the thing. Whenever I moved to Trinidad, at the time, like, maybe when I first moved, I tried to battle against it. So, tried to just fight against it, just training, and kept doing my thing. But at Purple, I would fight some guys that are small, they would like be smaller than me, and they would give me like trouble because I was doing the same thing as they. I was being a little guy against a little guy, but the little guy has been doing that for longer, it's faster, it's probably going to win or give you a hard time. So that was something they were trying to put in my head. Man, you have to use more pressure, your size, like get more to the half guard. Like look at Roger, like he made it effortless. And you don't see him as a muscle guy. He's just like, he knows how to position himself. He's gonna like put himself in a good position and he's there on top of you and you can move. So that opened up my mind. I was like, man, I want that thing. Like, I want to look like that, like afterwards, you know? And if I need to be fast, I will be fast. I have that on me and I'm gonna lose it. So that's one of the things. And whenever I started to work and I could apply that on training, I was like, fuck, that's good. And also like my close guard too. I got in love with the classic jiu-jitsu pretty much. And that's the thing that I've been working a lot. Like, and I think I started to work there more on my like, beginning of my brown belt. You know, like I think in the second year as brown belt, I was able to like do a lot of close guard finish, mount a lot of people. And that was a good feeling, you know, cause you start to become like, I'm already dangerous because I already have good foot locks and stuff. So you just like make your game bigger and it's just good. And if you see good guys now, they're trying to mount more. And pressure is not a thing that everybody's going to have, man. It takes time for it to improve. Because if I'm fighting someone that's really competitive, hardly you're going to be able to work your little details. So sometimes you need to work with somebody that's lower rank and find like the good drills and someone to be looking over you, you know, like, that takes some time.
Right, I'm going to go smash some white belts, because Victor told me to.
Yeah, you know, like, also escapes. Just ask the white belt to hug your head and be on the side control. It's going to be freaking hard to like, escape. Even more if he's, like, if he works, like, doing strength, like, I don't know, maybe he'll work at the port, carrying stuff. Ask that guy to hug in the side control. It's going to be pretty hard to escape, you know, so it's crazy.
For sure, man.
You can, yeah. Cause I myself, like, I had like back in my city, I had a lot of friends that they moved out to São Paulo, where is the biggest thing in like capital for jiu-jitsu back then. They had Leandro Lowe, they had the Miaus, and I always had this mindset. I was like, maybe I don't need to, you know, like if I find the right partners to work the right stuff, I'm not gonna be able to. And that's what I've been doing the whole time. If you see our team, we don't have like huge competitors. We don't have like an army. We have like good mentors and like good tough training partners that know how to defend themselves. Some other training partners, they know how to like hold a position and you work with it, you know, like at some point it's good for you to have like a tough training, but if you're just competing every day, you're not getting better at specific things, you know, like that's how I feel about it, you know?
I think it was Lucas Lepree we were chatting to, and he was saying that when he was training for like the Worlds, he had like one purple belt, the rest were blues. But what he said is he wouldn't drill. His drilling would be sparring against the blues and the purples. That was
that's the way, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they're gonna give you the raw reaction.
Mm.
They give you the reaction, and that's why you need to drill off too. Like, oh, if I try to pass, is he gonna try in or out? If he tries in, what's he gonna do? He's gonna maybe underhook me. He's gonna try to single leg me, or he's just gonna lock himself. So we can work ourselves on these reactions. And at some point, like Lucas Lepre, he's a new level. So he almost can think faster than the guys. So out of that, he can start to work what he wants. Like, oh, for him, I have this and that. So I love to work. Back at the University of Jiu-Jitsu in San Diego, maybe before the competition, as you guys asked, I'll choose a day and just like, it's a thing that we call in Brazil, bite. I'll just bite everyone. What do I mean bite? I just like shoot triangles, shoot footlocks, like maybe shoot two arms. I'll just do that for the whole night, but not drilling itself, like rolling. I'll get someone just like triangle them like 10 times and then maybe spin to the leg like 10 times because I'm putting work and the guy is actually trying to defend. But you know, I have been way more doing that way more like longer for way more longer than him, and that makes me like work on my speed, I think. And the other days I'll just try to mount everyone, and then some guys would be tough, they have good mount defense. Some others would be easier, but either way, I'll be improving because I'm putting hours on that position, you know? So I think that solidifies like each position.
You know, like it's right. It's interesting how you're talking about different submissions, like from footlock to triangle, those are completely different worlds. Do you remember like in what sort of order you got good at things? Like what was the thing that you first felt like, ah, this is my thing, and then that was my thing until now?
Not really, because also I'm a little bit of a copycat. I was to be like back then, because those guys that I mentioned it, like Jonas, do you guys know Jonas, the small guy, the black belt? He lives in Spain, Jonas Andrade.
In Barcelona, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, he could be an example. He, as a white belt, I would go to tournaments. He'd be like same, not same division of weight, but like age group. And he would put like, he had like five fights at white belt. He would put like four guys to sleep with a loop choke. And I was like, damn, what's the loop choke about? And I'll just be watching him. And I'm like, man, I want to learn the loop choke. And I'll go back to the school and like be like, hey, to my professor, hey, man, how do I do a loop choke? And I'll do add that to my game. Another kid will maybe just do footlocks. And I'll be like, damn, he submitted three guys in the tournament, footlocks? I want to learn something about the footlock. Maybe I'll Google some fight. Maybe I'll ask some friends if they know how to do a footlock. Maybe I'll go for a seminar of someone who's doing a footlock. And that's how I think you get better, you know? You can, like, learn from watching. And, like, I think every person that are some level, they're black belts or something. Like leg drag. I started to do leg drags because I saw this kid doing a leg drag competition. And then I was like, damn, that looks like a cool movement. And I'll Google it and stuff. And then I started to do, like, I tried to do a leg drag in a blue belt and I couldn't move his leg. And I was like, maybe I gotta start from the bottom. And I started to do it in yellow belts and then blue belts. And then, oh, I can't do it in blue belts and then purple belts. So I think that's what crafted me. Like, that's the work that I craft the position, you know? And I think about footlocks, maybe I just got curious about it and then, like, start to look who is doing footlocks, which position can I bring a footlock at, like, maybe a 50-50, maybe a single X. And then I start to apply that to my training and develop it myself, you know, like, maybe if I need a little help, I'll ask someone. Because, as I said, some people, there are black belts at this little position here. So I think that helped me a lot. And I'm never too good to don't ask. If you do something to me that I think is cool, I'm going to be like, can you show me that? Because that's also that's also something that Shanji does a lot. That he asks a lot. I was like, what is that thing that he did? Can you do it to me? And then you can add to your game, you know? Like, that's the thing.
Is there anything?
I remember. Keep going.
No, go on, go on, go on. You're on the roll. I like it. Go on.
I remember I was in Brazil, and I was like, I think I was a brown belt world champion, and There's this thing that people do from the close guard. They wrap your arm and they grab their own gi. And I did that to some guy. He was like probably 150 pound masters, not even compete. And he did like a wrist lock out of that thing to me. I was like, what? And I was like, can you show me that? And he showed me, and I used that forever. I haven't used that forever.
Is that
never saw that guy again? Yeah.
So the guy over
whenever you have the grip there.
Yeah.
So what he does is his arm is in the other hook. I'm going to go underneath the left shoulder of yours. I'm going to grab my hand, and I'm going to squeeze. They're going to wrist lock the hand that you have there.
Yeah,
if
nice.
If you have a grip on my gi.
Yeah, because they feed it to the cross grip, right?
Yeah, because if you don't feed, it's kind of loose, so you can pop your elbow. So a lot of people, they feed because they keep it tight. But if you do that, you're going to wrist lock them. And I didn't know that. And the guy come in and, like, he showed me that. And of course, he does it to everyone. he was a black and red and black belt down there. So he showed me, and I was like, oh, let's do it. And then I applied that forever. You know, competition, training, you know, because that's a really, like, position hard to skip. And from there on, that's just one example. I have done that many times.
I go for the overhook from close guard all the time.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. Oh, that's all I ever do.
Pretty much since we've turned blue belts, we've all been trying to, like, wrist lock each other.
Yeah.
It's like...
The dark side.
There's a group of us that kind of got our blue belts around the same time.
So we're like, finally. Yeah.
But, like, not good wrist locks. Like, out of nowhere, like, wrist lock.
Yeah.
Just throw it out there. I was going to ask, is there anything that you, like, kind of naturally weren't good at, that you struggled at a bit and really had to, like, knuckle down and think, I need to address this in my game?
That I was good at, I think I was better at, pretty much.
Yeah, that you were bad at.
I think, like, something I was good at that I felt good right away was triangles, because I have long legs. So once the coach showed me, like, how to do a triangle, I kept drilling, and that was something I was able to apply almost all the time. So I think that's been one of my favorite movements, is white belt. And bad at, I think it was, like, at some point in blue belt, I realized I wasn't so good passing guard. I was too sloppy. I had no movement. I was kind of sloppy, and I was like, man, I need to start to work my passing. And that's something that I worked on. And I think now it's pretty fine. Like, I got to get better at it. And I still work on it a lot, you know? Because you either on your feet or on your knees, but you have to be aware a lot where your weight is at. Because if you're fighting a skillful guy on the bottom, it's so easy for him to sneak out a leg, because I do that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I know, you know, like, it's easy for you to recover a guard if you have a good body movement and stuff. So I think passing guard is like the thing, because I'm so big, so much like coordination to do, weight to be here, weight to be there. So at some point in a while, I was like, I need to work on my passing guard. So I started to pass more guard for sure.
If you had a, if you had a white belt coming fresh, never trained before, and he wanted to compete in 6 months, what would you teach him?
I think first thing I'm going to teach him how to fall, because I don't want him to die during the competition. fall on his head, the responsibility is going to be all on me. Probably, it depends how I can read him, you know, what's his background. Is he tall? Is he short? Like, if he's a taller guy, has long legs, I would just show him how to fall, show him tripod sweep, and show him how to close a guard, like just close guard. And from there, depending on how he would respond to my coaching, I'll show him more stuff, maybe a triangle from the close guard. So it has a lot to do, like, that's the thing too, like, you gotta read the guy, you know? And also, like, yeah, like, read the guy and maybe work around it. Like, if he has shorter legs, I'm not gonna teach him close guard, because probably he's not gonna be able to close guard on most of the people. So he's a guy that I'm gonna show, oh man, you gotta go top, I gotta stay on top, just work on you, get to everybody's half guard, and from there we work, you know, like, it depends a lot, you know?
That's so interesting, especially because, like, you've been teaching a lot, like, I've started watching, like, a lot of your videos, like, tutorials and stuff, and I wonder, do you get a lot from teaching that you don't get from competing and training for yourself?
Oh yeah, because I think whenever I start to teach, I guess you go back in time and work and see little details, you know, like that I wasn't seeing it. Or maybe bring a technique back. Maybe I'm doing a lot of open guard, I'm lifting a lot, like elevating a lot, getting under a lot, but I'm not doing tripods enough. I'm like, what am I not doing tripods? Tripods are still working even a black belt. Sometimes people forget how to position their feet and they're gonna be able to do tripods. Because Jiu-Jitsu is so big, so at some point you're gonna be missing out on some details, or maybe something you can apply, and it could be something simple, you know? So that's the thing, whenever you're teaching, that makes you think wider. You think wider all the time. Because if I just think on the high level stuff, how am I gonna teach my white belts? So that makes me go back in time and I be aware, like, oh, maybe I can do more close guard. Why am I not doing armbar for close guard as much lately? So it makes you like go back in time and try to apply more basic things to your like game, you know? That's one of the things I think.
I've got a question. So I've been fortunate enough to start helping our coach with some of the teaching, but literally like the new guys that come in, show them a break four, show them a hip escape, show them this, mm-hmm. show them like some really basic stuff. Have you got any advice for like myself when I'm just starting out with teaching? Because teaching and coaching is something I really want to get into later on. But right now, I almost feel brand new again, like completely lost in that arena. Have you got any advice to like, to things to think about or focus on?
Yeah, just try to maybe you don't need to ask, but just try to know what's the guy that you teach about, what is he looking for? Is he trying to lose weight? If that guy is just trying to lose weight, he's probably not gonna care so much about how perfect his hip escape is. He just wants to work more. So maybe don't give him as much detail, just do like, man, that looks great. Just do like 15 of that one and it's gonna be good. Because he's just trying to lose weight. Why is the guy, is he depression? He's like, he's just there because he needs to make friends. Maybe just wanna pump up the guy. Just like, you're doing great, man. You're doing great. Just keep doing what you're doing because you're looking great. You maybe give a detail, one detail too, but you don't need to be like right there. Why is the guy, like, is the guy trying to learn Jiu-Jitsu? He wants to like understand every aspect of it. Maybe you can give him a little more extra, like, oh, maybe you can escape your hip like this. Maybe you can use your foot on the mat and do like this. You just gotta read what's like the guy wants, you know? And I think that's gonna help you a lot, you know? Because Jiu-Jitsu, you're gonna have to spend a lot of time to be good at it. So maybe you're teaching mousecape today, but I'm pretty sure they're not gonna get it today. It's the work that they're gonna put from now on. If they forget about it tomorrow, sucks. They're gonna have to learn it again. But maybe if other person's doing that tomorrow, he might come at you and like, can you show me that again? Like, I'm probably doing this mistake or that mistake. So that filters more, you know, like whenever you know what you gotta want.
You gotta be patient.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, patience. Patience is key for sure.
I was telling
them. And I think for white belts, a lot to do like energy too.
Yeah.
A lot of, most of them just want energy. So they don't want you to teach crazy positions. They just want your energy and to feel good about it. So just positive, be positive, you know?
I was telling my coach, I was teaching someone a tripod sweep, and I said that he was literally his first day, no gi, kind of like in the training clothes. And I said to him, put your foot behind his knee. And he got his hand and he grabbed his ankle. And I was like, bro, you're going to have to meet me halfway here. We all start somewhere, but come on, man.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy. And yeah, and it's cool though. Like, it's a good feeling whenever you get someone to know what you're doing, you know?
For sure.
And some people, they improve so fast. You can see the improvements right away. It's exciting. I like teaching, man. Teaching is cool. Because you get better because you start to build your own system. Oh, probably whenever you get home, you're like, oh, probably I could have worked on that better. You know, tripods. The main thing to see, you got to be good at teaching tripods. Because everybody's going to miss the grip on the ankle. And almost everybody, whenever they fall, they let it go the legs and they get up. And then they have to go back again. Like, you guys cannot let it go the legs when you get it up because the person's going to get up and going to lose the position. Also, everybody's going to try to, like, out of tripod, come out in the wrong way, almost like hurting the knees. And I have to tell them, whenever you do a tripod, you're going to do the technical stand up. So I think you just get back at it at a time because you taught that to 10 people before and you know what mistakes that people are going to make. So out of that, whenever you teach again, before you even close the position, you're going to throw. So things that I want you guys to work on it is how you're going to get up, keep your grips whenever you get up because you know what mistakes that you commit and you get better at it, you know? I think that's how it works.
That's so funny you're saying that because, like, I was just thinking then, sometimes when I come up out of a sweep, I let go of the leg because I want to pass. And like already I'm thinking. I'm now teaching that move and I don't even do it right sometimes. Yeah. So much to be learned.
Yeah, it's just like you get better at it with time because you see more, you see the details of the thing and throughout your own experience, you learn from that. Why am I missing now a tripod? Maybe I don't keep the grip. And then you have everything you can tell that to the white box. It's just like you're sharing your own experience, you know?
Definitely.
So interesting.
So Victor, interesting. My man, it's been an absolute pleasure. We usually open up this last portion of the podcast and hand it over to you. If there's anything you want to say, anything you want to promote, or any message you want to give to our listeners.
Just like, thank you for the time. I love the talk. I love to talk about jiu-jitsu. It was pretty cool. Big shout out to my friends, like, who are with me every day. And my message is just like, let's train jiu-jitsu, let's keep it real, let's be friends, let's look out for our partners, make sure that more than a training partner, you guys are friends with each other, because whenever you're doing jiu-jitsu with someone, you're spending time hugging each other, trying to kill each other. So be more open, like ask how your partner is doing. Do you know your partner's name? It has a lot to do with it too, because some people that train jiu-jitsu 5 times at a week and we don't even know the names of the people that are on the mat. I think that's something you should know. You should know more about your training partners and that will probably help you out get better at jiu-jitsu. Because then as more like close you are to each other, you can tell, man, you suck at close guard. You should work them more. I'm pretty sure you guys talked that.
Yeah, we do.
That's sweet. And now we're
yeah, like, we've got an honest feedback. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like that's the way, man. That's the way. Just thank you guys. There was a really nice conversation. I'm always open for more. And
cool. Victor, I'm pretty sure people want to know where they can find your courses. They also want to know about your Instagram, where they can follow. So you can please drop those too.
So I have four courses out. I have 3 courses on Jiu-Jitsu X. You type jiu-jitsu-x.com and it'll pop up. Just go in the browser, put Victor Hugo Jiu-Jitsu X. I have 3 courses there. One is called Upside Down World. It's just like the transitions that I did in tournaments, in training. I've been doing it for a long time. And there's a lot of things there. I invite you to come to the Upside Down World Tour. It's going to be fun. So there are things that you can, like, you probably don't know. And you're probably going to think that you can't do it. But whenever you face somebody that does a lot of invert guard, you know what they're up to already. So it's good for understanding. If you want to be good at something, you got to work for it. But if you don't get caught at something, it's good to understand the mechanics, mm-hmm. everything. So that's why I show too, like, I show all the transitions, and by learning that, you learn like you learn how to have a defense mechanism. Big move flow, I think, is my biggest drop so far. Everybody loves it. It's just showing how a big guy moves like a little guy. And I think a lot of people get a mistake sometimes. They think it's just for big men, but no, it's just a simple way for it to make you move like with more efficient. It's for everyone. Because the main thing about big man flow is the big man flowing. So if the big man can flow, you can flow too. You know, that's the main thing. Another really good course that I have is the 50-50 manual. I do a lot of 50-50, but people know that I have some crazy shit there. I like to go to the foot, other transitions. And I also have a lot of defense work in there. So as I said, if you want to beat something, you got to understand it. So make sure you all check it out. My leg locks manual is out there too. I know leg locks like a thing right now, so if you guys want to check it out, thank you so much. My Instagram is Victor Hugo JJ, and thank you everybody. Yeah, thank you guys for your time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Yeah. This is awesome.
It was really good, man, and all the best in the competitions coming up as well.
Thank you so much, guys. Yeah. Thank you so much. Stay in touch. Have a good day.
Thank you, man.
That was fun.
All the best.
Yeah. See you guys soon. Have a good day.